Welcome, everyone. We're glad you joined us. My name is Brad Rieger, and I have the privilege of moderating this discussion with Father Jim Basic, a longtime priest and theologian. And Father Basic, it's good to be with you always.
I'm looking forward to it, Brad.
So this this segment, we're going to talk about Jesus according to Luke, and eventually, specifically, we're going to get to this idea of working for justice.
Uh-huh.
Luke obviously was really focused on economically and socially poor, disenfranchised and oppressed, and just really people living on the margins. I just described Jesus basically also. So,
yes.
But we probably should do some setup about Luke's gospel.
Yeah, right. And even further back, we might go back to the question that Jesus posed to his own disciples, who do you say that I am? Mm. And you know, over half the people in the world have a positive answer to that. That would be Christians who say, yes, he's the Son of God. That would be Muslims who say, yes, he's a great prophet and is a product of a virgin birth. And so we got over half the people in the world have answered that question positively. Mm. And there's other people searching to say, well, a person who's that powerful, that influential for 2,000 years, maybe I ought to find out, who do you say that I am? Right. Now, we got four gospels, right? We got what we call the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We call them synoptic gospels because if you put them side by side, you can look at them together and you can see where they're exactly the same word for word, and in other places they will be different. And so the common theory, we call it the two source theory, is that Matthew and Luke copied from Mark, that Mark wrote first around the year 70, I would say after 70. 70 is a known date because that's when, after a four-year siege of Jerusalem, the Romans captured Jerusalem and destroyed the temple. That's in 70. That's a historical event we know. So say Mark wrote in right after that. And then Luke and Matthew have his in hand when they write. And there's other places where they're exactly the same. Matthew and Luke, exactly the same words, but not in Mark. And we figured there had to be a written source if it's word for word. We call that the Q document, so scholars call it. We don't have it, but you can reconstruct it by looking at what's in Matthew and in Luke that's the same or slightly different. So we get Luke's gospel as a product. He wasn't an eyewitness. You know, he borrowed his material. He told us in the introduction, I'm investigating the historical sources. And so his main historical source was Mark, the Gospel of Mark, and then this Q document. And of all the gospel writers, Luke was probably the best writer, a great, beautiful, elegant Greek writer, contrast to Mark, who was a poor writer, really. And so we have a distinctive figure then. Each of the Gospels, if we look at them individually, give us a little different picture of Jesus. So we say Mark, he's an exorcist. He casts out demons. In Matthew, he's a teacher, goes up on the mountain like Moses, teaches the people. In Luke, I would say a summary phrase, he's a prophet of justice. One way of thinking, he's a liberator. So in the early, the first sermon that Jesus gives in Luke's gospel, he identified himself with the servant who would come, the Son of Man who would come and free the captives and preach the good news to the poor. So that's takes us into what I think is the heart of what we're looking at here. Luke sees Jesus as this one who's came to preach the good news to the poor and to free the captives.
Yeah, and there's some really poignant stories in Luke.
Yeah, let's go back to his first great sermon in So Matthew and Luke, we figure, got the great sermon. Matthew's a sermon on the Mount, which is most known to people, and Luke's sermon from a Q document.
And is it named Sermon on the Plain? I'd never seen that term before.
Well, the contrast with Matthew, who has Jesus like Moses, goes up a mountain and preaches from there. Luke has him preaching at a plain. So they change it, but one of the key differences on the point we're talking about here, if you read Matthew's gospel, this great sermon on the Mount, like Moses, he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," right? When you read Luke's sermon on the plain in chapter 6, it says, Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor." Nothing just about poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor, straight out, straightforward. And then he goes on to reinforce his point, and woe to the rich. Woe to the rich. That's going to be tough to talk about, Brad.
Yep.
Especially those of us who are privileged. You know, woe to the rich. But that's the difference. Most scholars think that Luke is the one who was faithful to Q, that the document originally said, "Blessed are the poor," and Matthew softened it or did a great pastoral job of showing how it meant you could speak about it to people who are more affluent. So I'm going to go with Luke, the idea that "blessed are the poor" is what is his stark phrase, and strengthened by "woe to the rich."
And it's more encompassing than "blessed are the poor in spirit."
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if it's more encompassing. It's starker.
Starker.
It's more challenging. It's harder for us to talk about.
Yeah.
Yes. Presuming a lot of people listening are well-to-do American people, you know. So that creates some of the problem, which maybe we should address right away.
Because there's stories.
Let's wait a while. Let's see what else Luke tells us. How about the guy who builds grain, has a great harvest?
Well, makes some sense, right? Save up for a rainy day or a famine?
It makes sense, doesn't it? You're going to build bigger barns and so on. And then that stark phrase that I know people who use this phrase in their own life. "This day your soul will be required." I know a person who remembers that phrase every day. They think they got their life in order, everything's wonderful, we just, you know, got our bonus check for the year, large bonus. "This day your soul will be required." The guy remembers that every day, to remember to get it, to try to get his priorities straight. But in the story, this guy's forgetting about God's things. He's got his priorities wrong. And he doesn't think about the things of God. He's just thinking about more bigger grains. And of course, you know, you can put a benign into it. Yeah, he's thinking ahead. Good for him. Bright guy. Just put a little money aside for if we have a recession coming up. You know, you're going to save money for that. And this is a prudent thing to do. And yet, Luke looks upon it as misguided. It's too greedy for Luke. He's not concerned about the things of God. Right. You know, what would that mean for somebody in ordinary life, like who has a good job, works hard, and gets a promotion and makes more money, and
saving for children's education and welfare.
Now I'll be able to provide for my grandchildren someday and make sure they can go to college. It's all wonderful ideas, I think, and laudable things. And you can put a positive spin on it, but in Luke's story of it, he puts a negative spin on it. The guy got his priorities wrong, and he acted in a greedy way.
And then there's also the parable of the rich fool.
That's the rich fool.
That's the rich fool?
Yeah, he was foolish, yeah.
one's life does not consist of possessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
What about the one about the preferential option for the poor, the dinner guests?
That's something I want to save that, Brad.
That's
a
big
one. Fact.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, because that becomes more problematic for people. Make sure at the end you save time and don't let me talk through it.
We are not.
We will talk about the preferential option for the poor.
What other story?
What about Lazarus and the rich man? Oh, Lazarus doesn't have anything. He's lying at the door of the rich man, and who, I think the important thing, doesn't notice him. And then when they both die, you know, Lazarus, the poor man, is comforted in the afterlife, and the rich man suffers. He's thirsty, doesn't have water. Just let Abraham come and put a little bit of water in my mouth. No. So it's a reversal. You gotta be careful of interpreting that. It can't get to the point of saying, well, Lazarus, because he was poor, is virtuous. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do that. Not all poor people are virtuous. Some are, some aren't. Some well-to-do people are virtuous, some are, some aren't. Same thing. So it's not a reward thing. There's a reversal to the ordinary way of thinking of life. When we think about life, when we have our friends who are well off and got good jobs and make good money and could go to Kenya for an African safari, you know, we got those people. But it's not the last word. In other words, the way our eyes perceive social strata, it's like in India, you got the untouchables. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a terrible system. I mean, it looks down on people. And one of the things Luke is telling us here is it's not like it appears. There might be other things going on, you know, with the wealthy and with the poor. But Lazarus is happy now in heaven.
One of the quotes in the Bible that attributed to Jesus says, for it to be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. Now, talk about a metaphor or
yeah,
a visual.
Really. I mean, that's that's a tough one. One of the things I'm struggling with here and talking about is people, I know people who would not come to church where they knew some of those parables were going to be told by Luke. Hmm. They didn't want to be subjected to it. They didn't want a sermon say, yeah, you're one of those wealthy guys, you're going to go to hell.
So when you were preaching,
yeah,
how was the body language on some of those sermons? Could you tell it was?
Well, yes, and I would usually play to it, just like I'm trying to do now. Yeah. You know, I'd usually recognize it. You know, some of, you know, let's see how we heard this. Some of people are saying, good, the poor are going to be better. I'm on welfare. Maybe I'll get off welfare. People are well-to-do are saying, wait a second. I don't want to feel guilty. I don't want to feel guilty about this. I'm not coming to church to feel guilty. And so I would try to say, well, the problem is when people who have money, affluence, power, prestige, don't use it to help other people. That's the problem. The invitation is to say, okay, I'm well off. How could I help other people? Hmm. I think that's the way I would try to frame, one of the ways I would try to frame it. Yeah.
Yeah. What about Zacchaeus?
Zacchaeus, yeah. That's an interesting story. I was talking about a movie about Zacchaeus and who was going to play Zacchaeus. I had Danny DeVito.
That's a good visual.
as playing Zacchaeus. So Zacchaeus is short in stature, you know, not tall. He wasn't potential for the NBA.
Point guard, maybe.
Yeah, really. So here's Danny DeVito. He's a tax collector. Hated among the Jewish people. So we got the socio-political situation. Rome is occupying the land. They're in charge. they have a threefold taxation on ordinary people like Jesus and Mary and Joseph. There's a temple tax, there's the Romans taking theirs off the top, and then they had Quisling type people, Second World War metaphor, Quislings, French, people who collaborated with the Romans and would, to their own gain. I mean, that was the situation. So who did the Jews hate most? The Quislings, the tax collectors, most terrible people, because not only are they collaborating with the Roman occupying power, but they're skimming off for themselves. And that's what Zacchaeus was doing. So Jesus coming by, and Danny DeVito flies, climbs up in a tree so he can see him coming. And Jesus spots him up in a tree and says, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house for dinner tonight. What? People, you're going to that terrible person's, you know, the collaborator's house? You can't do that. He's a terrible man. Jesus goes to his house anyway and visits with Zacchaeus. And the upshot is Zacchaeus says, yeah, I've been ripping people off. I'm going to give back many times over people. And those who I distorted, I'm going to take care of. I'm going to give money to the poor. And so we got a conversion moment where Zacchaeus turns it around, and Jesus commends him for that. But so Jesus spots, Jesus doesn't say, Zacchaeus, get out of that tree, I don't want to see you. Or the people will be disappointed with me if I come to your house. No, Jesus is straightforward. I just thinking about something you said before that usually jogged my memory, but let's remember Jesus himself was relatively poor. I mean, there's a lot of debate about it. I mean, Jesus wasn't starving like some people are in Africa right now. He wasn't starving. He was a Galilean peasant, but life was not easy. And he wasn't wealthy. He had no place to lay his head, it is said, when he was preaching, going around preaching and so on. But he wasn't a wealthy person. If you looked at that sign of who's the haves and who's the have-nots, he's among the have-nots and not among the privileged.
So there's many rich stories that are challenging in this area. Yeah. Let's take it to a present day with Pope Francis, who follows Jesus' path and is really tuned in to the poor.
It's wonderful. I mean, it's nice for us Catholics to have the head of our church be such a wonderful role model. So he lives a simple life himself, right? He didn't wear the ermine cape when he came out for the first time to present himself. He doesn't move into the apostolic palace where all the other popes have lived. He moves into a guest house. And in the guest house, he's got his own small apartment and so on. Simple life, and with a great feel for the vulnerable, the outcasts, you know. In the Hebrew scriptures, God says, I hear the cries of the poor. I hear the cries of the poor. And if you want to be treated, don't give me sacrifice. I don't need ritual sacrifice. What I need you to do is take care of the widows and the orphans and the aliens. That's true religion. That's how you live properly. Take care. Those are the marginalized people. Widows, a terrible thing. They didn't have any man to take care of them. You know, it was a tough life. The orphans and the aliens, the estranged ones. So, So Francis is serious about that. He has an innate feel for the poor and the vulnerable, and he will say it over and over.
And there was a document, The Joy of the Gospel, where income inequality was addressed.
Yeah.
Again, challenging.
Yeah. you want to get into trouble with people, go with that.
Redistribution of wealth typically doesn't resonate, right?
Yeah. It's he actually said in that encyclical that inequality is the root of all social evils. And it gets very difficult to explain or whatever, but let me try to do it by saying that Francis is from Latin America, okay? Grew up in Argentina. He was a bishop in Argentina. He was very influenced by what we call the theology of liberation, which developed the idea of the preferential option for the poor. So he was in on the ground floor of that theological development. And the great stress in that, Jesus was the liberator of captives. Like he came, said in chapter 4 of Luke, I came to free the captives. And they took that seriously. And they developed, in modern terms, this whole idea of the preferential option for the poor. Now, we got to say what that doesn't mean, okay? That doesn't mean God loves poor people more than rich people. No. It doesn't mean that poor people are automatically virtuous. It doesn't mean that people who are well off should take a patronizing attitude towards the poor. Like, I got this and I will dole out this bit of money for people and so on. It does not mean any of those things. What it means that in a society, we would judge it on how it does in taking care of the most vulnerable, the unborn, the poor, the marginalized, the disabled, and so on. That in a society, you know, when we got trouble, COVID comes, the well-off do well. They're fine. They take care of themselves and so on. Who suffers the most? The poor. If there's a hurricane, who suffers the most? The poor. No, that they are the most vulnerable. They don't have the resources. So, more positively, what Pope Francis wants is to say that we want to empower the poor. We don't want to straighten the poorest people out, tell them what to do. He likes to say, accompany them. That's one of his favorite words, accompany them. Walk with them. Be with them. Try to empower them. The great thing is so that they can take hold of their own lives, so they can be active in their own behalf. So we can't tell them what to do. We have to try to set up a situation where we will walk with them, where we will support them in their efforts to be active agents for their own life. That's more what the preferential option of the poor is trying to do. And so an important part of that is that we can learn from the poor. France is really big on it. Listen to the poor, and you might learn something. Well, our students, we used to send students on trips to Haiti or something. And we would pray with them before they went and told them to be able, open to the people and so on. When they come back, we had what we called theological reflections. And then in that, it's like, what did you learn? What did you learn from those poor people? You know, and even harder questions, why are they poor in Haiti? Why are people poor in Haiti? You know, so that method is a way of exercising the preferential option for the poor. Listen to them, try to learn from them, walk with them, and, you know, we can do that in ordinary life.
And so that's probably the biggest takeaway from Luke's gospel and this idea of working for justice.
Yeah, yeah. Then you got the question, well, okay, what does that mean for us today, doesn't it? Do we have time for that?
We do.
Yeah. Well, what are we going to do about that? First of all, I'd say for the well-to-do to come to church, don't feel guilty. Not going to get anything done by feeling guilty. This is not demeaning the rich to say, to talk about Luke's sermon on the plain. Blessed are the poor and woe to the rich. You know, let's see, maybe it's encouragement to not take for granted what we have. How about that? Hmm. Realize that we got a break. We're on third base, but we didn't hit a triple. You know, we got, because you had your good parents, because you had opportunities in life and so on, that you're on. That's why you're on third base. Yes. You know, that's why. So we have to be grateful for what we got. I mean, there's other ways of. There's an organization called Bread for the World. Bread for the World is a Christian group, and they try to lobby Congress on behalf of the marginalized and the poor. So one way of saying, well, okay, I want to help out. I want to accompany the poor. Join Bread for the World. Mm. And then you can multiply your voice, because sometimes they've gotten things, legislation passed in Congress that will do more than any money you could ever give. You know, because now there's legislation in place that will help poor people in our country. So that would be one concrete way, I would say, of, you know, some people might want to, they give gifts to people at Christmas time, which is a nice thing to do for poor families. But maybe they would stay in touch with them throughout the year. Visit with them, talk with them, try to accompany them, to use the Pope's words and so on. There's another good thing we do in the Catholic Church that I am proud of, and we should stress. We have the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. That's it. We're collecting. There's two things that go on there. One is we collect money for self-help programs for the poor. I'll get back to that in a minute. The other thing is it's a chance to educate ourselves about the problems of poverty. Mm. I mean, how can we have this much poverty in our own country? People living below the poverty line, a high percentage of black people, high percentage of Hispanics, too many whites living below the poverty line in this affluent country. So we're educating ourselves, well, why is that? What can we do about it? But the Campaign for Human Development says, we want to help. We don't want to give a handout to the poor. We don't want a handout. We're going to give them a way out. Give the poor a way out. In other words, a great example would be a small group in a neighborhood who want to start a community center for the kids after school, where they could come and learn and be out of trouble and so on. That's a way out. It's empowering people, So that would be another way, right, that ordinary people could support. I always, if people ask me, well, I want to give my money to charity. What's a good charity? Often, Campaign for Human Development. It's too underplayed. It doesn't get enough publicity, but it does a lot. They have hundreds of programs. People have to apply for it and show how they're going to run it, and they have to run it themselves. It embodies all those principles of a preferential option for the poor in a concrete way, and a lot of people benefited from it.
Yeah. Well, this has been a challenging conversation, but you've offered a lot of different perspectives that spurs reflection. So thank you for that.
Yeah, let's hope. So what's our takeaway? Read Luke's gospel. He's a prophet of justice, right? He's told wonderful stories that help us to get our heads straight about wealth and so on. He helps us to deal with the inequalities in our own culture, and to see concrete ways that we could be actually helpful. Bread for the World and our whole Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Go for it.
Well said. Thank you, Father Basin.